This is a pivotal passage, a very important passage that explains to us why at some point in the Bible, instead of having one single kingdom of Israel with its capital city in Jerusalem, from this point onwards in Bible history, you will see two kingdoms, the northern kingdom, the kingdom of Israel, they will take that name with them, and the southern kingdom, the kingdom of Judah, with two capital cities. Eventually, Samaria will become the capital city of the northern kingdom, and Jerusalem will remain the capital city of the southern kingdom. It is a lot of material to be covered, because we're talking about reading 1 Samuel, 2 Samuel, to give you the background, and then 1 Kings, 2 Kings, 1 Chronicles, 2 Chronicles, at least, so that you'd have a broad picture that tells you how these two kingdoms, sometimes working side by side as allies, most of the times antagonizing each other, they both will end in failure. And that's a very general but true message of these accounts in the Book of Kings and the Book of Chronicles. So I'll try to be very brief. As you can see, I have only two pages here. And in fairness to me, the material I have, it has actually six pages. So there are some big names I have to mention here. Rehoboam and Jeroboam, okay? But don't be distracted by that and just try to see the flow of it. The way I'll organize, so I have two introductory paragraphs here. Then we'll concentrate first on the northern kingdom, and then we'll concentrate on the southern kingdom, and then a final statement trying to sum it all up, okay? So, and I hope I will do it in 20 minutes or less. Here we go. So from this passage, we see how King Solomon departed from the exclusive worship of the Lord. It doesn't mean that Solomon stopped worshiping the Lord, but he added other shrines and other temples, other gods into the religious life of Israel, persuaded by his many wives. Solomon's son, Rehoboam, he attempted to assume the throne of Israel, but he was unsuccessful. I'm just making reference to, but we are not going to read, chapter 12 in 1 Kings. It's just the following chapter, and you have the whole story that tells you how and when it actually happened, and how there was this rupture between the tribes of Israel and 10 decided to have another king, and two, Judah and Benjamin, they will remain allied together in the south. The northern tribes were upset with Solomon because he imposed harsh labor conditions on them. He treated them like Canaanites rather than fellow Israelites. You'd have to go and read the book of Deuteronomy, at least, and read the whole of the book of Joshua, when in some occasions, if instead of destroying, you know, invading the land and wiping out, whole cities or a whole ethnic group, they would submit those groups into forced labor, like the Gibeonites. They were, from that point on in Israelite history, they were assigned the task of drawing water, among other things, forced labor. But Solomon started doing or implementing that kind of treatment to their own fellow Israelite people. So they were being treated like the Canaanites. Rather than listening to experienced advisors who told him to soften his approach to the north, Rehoboam heeded the advice of his contemporaries, his own age, who told him to be harsh on the north, actually harsher than his father was. I think it's the same that what happens in North Korea every time a new dictator ascends to power. And the first thing the dictator ascends to power, normally very young, like, you know, the one who's there, in a way of showing power, he starts to be as harsh as he can and to be as strong or even stronger than his predecessor as a way of establishing himself in power. But this is what this man here did. And of course, because he said that to them, they rejected him as king, and they elected another man, a man called Jeroboam. So let's have a look at how things worked for the northern kingdom, okay? Jeroboam had a problem, and that problem was the temple. So here I am, I have 10 tribes, but I do not have the temple. And Israelite unity was stronger, religiously speaking, than it was politically. How to solve that problem? What was his fear? Well, people will continue to have to go down, cross the borders, and go to Jerusalem and worship. With time, what is going to happen? Well, they will feel, well, it's time to be back and to go back and to be one nation again. And he will lose face, he will lose power, and he will lose his kingdom. Who knows? He might end up losing his own life. What does he decide? Well, he built 2 altars. One at the far north. If Israel were Scotland, so you'd have one at least as far as the Black Isle, or even further away. And another one at the borders. 2 altars. Basically say, you don't need to go to Jerusalem. There's a golden calf of all animals. And it's incredible how people forget their own history so easily, so quickly. 2 golden calves. You remember the story of the Exodus? But there you are, one in the north, one in the south. You don't need to cross the borders. There is an Old Testament scholar that calls it realpolitik. Do you know the expression? Basically, the use of religion to manipulate the people for a political end, and this or for a political gain. This is what this man is doing here, manipulating the nation in order to stay and to secure his position of power. One in Dan, the other one in a place called Bethel. And he erected these shrines focused on worship. The book of Kings records that every single successive king of the north would continue this abominable practice of idolatry, thus leading to the ultimate judgment of the northern kingdom. Kings succeeded via assassination. It's crazy how people are so thirsty for power, and when they start to think the track record of how long those kings lasted and how they were replaced, and they still went for it. There are, I don't know, I stopped counting how many times a king ascended to power and then he was killed and then the other ascends to power. There is a particular case of a king who killed the previous guy, ascended to power 7 days, and he was assassinated and replaced. That's Northern Kingdom for you. And that was the practice until the rise of a king named Omri, whose son was the infamous Ahab. You know the story? Ahab, Jezebel, prophet Elijah, and later prophet Elisha. Okay? So that's the guy, Ahab. The infamous Ahab. Well, the house of Omri was destroyed by divine appointment of another king, Jehu, but he too fell into gross idolatry. This guy, Jehu, had an important descendant, the most important descendant that he had. For 4 generations, he managed to establish a short dynasty. And this is another Jeroboam, now Jeroboam II. Well, you can relate to that. We had Elizabeth I, and we have Elizabeth II. Not necessarily related, are they? In the same situation, Jeroboam I, not related to Jeroboam II, but Jeroboam II is important because his kingdom expanded to near unprecedented boundaries. It was a time of prosperity and wealth. as well as idolatry, which gives people false confidence. Who needs God? Look how we are doing well. Okay? And Jeroboam, but despite that, God used internal and external factors to bring the northern kingdom to an end. Once Jeroboam the second is out of the picture, we will see a sharp decline, and in 747 BC, a king named Zechariah is killed. Jehu's dynasty comes to an end, and then you have a succession of short-lived kings, one killed after another. Finally, under the Assyrians, or the Assyrian king, Shalmaneser the fifth and Sargon the second, Israel was defeated and exiled, and that was 722 BC. The city of Samaria was devastated. The people of the land were sent away. Alien people from other lands were brought in, and that's how, what in the New Testament we know them, that's how the Samaritans will come into the picture in the New Testament. So all this confusion, all this clash of power, all this prejudice between different people, because Solomon decided to play with fire. And I'm not talking about the devil, I'm talking about God. Now, the southern kingdom, Judah and Benjamin. Without mentioning all the southern kings by name, okay, take your time, read the whole material. You will see plenty of names and tongue twisters for you to practice, okay? It is good to notice that whereas all the kings in the north received always a bad assessment, there's not a single king in the north that you could say, oh, he is a good king. He is a godly king. He is a king who's trying to do things right. Even Jehu, he was anointed by a prophet to go and exercise and implement judgment upon the house of Ahab or upon the house of Omri. But, you know, he went over the top and he ended up becoming an idolater like everybody else. In the south, things were not as bad. There are some few honorable exceptions, such as Asa. 1 Kings 15:11. Could someone read that? Yeah, did what was right in the eyes of the Lord as David his father. It's interesting. David is always the reference. Even when God pronounces judgment upon Solomon and how God mitigates judgment upon Solomon, saying it's not going to happen to you right now because of David. And you will still retain two tribes with you for you to exercise authority and the house of David to have continuity, not because of you, Solomon, but because of my son or my servant, David. And when you see a reference to a godly king, it's not according to Solomon or anyone, it goes back to David. It's an interesting thing. Then you have another king, another exception, Jehoshaphat. Okay, no passage to be read, okay, but even though with some faults. Then we have another king called Joash, who although he purified the temple, he ended up unfortunately engaging in idolatry. You have to find that in the book of Chronicles. You won't find that in the book of Kings. You have Uzziah, the longest to reign among them. And you know Uzziah probably because of a passage in Isaiah chapter 6. In the year of the death of King Uzziah, I saw the Lord. Uzziah reigned for shortly over 50 years. and it was reasonably stable. Now the king is gone. What's going to be of us? And then Isaiah sees the Lord. There's someone else ruling, and he sees the Lord on his throne. So that's an interesting application there. And then you have another king named Hezekiah, who was not perfect, but he is regarded as one of the most faithful kings during that time. Hezekiah is the king who's, in whose time the Assyrians came, surrounded, sieged Jerusalem, and then taunted him. Prophet Isaiah comes to him and tells him, don't worry. And Hezekiah believes, and God disperses the enemy, who goes back, according to the biblical record, humiliated. And that king that taunted Hezekiah and the people of Israel ended up actually being assassinated by one of his servants back in Nineveh, the capital of the Assyrian empire. It is also Hezekiah, the man who was diagnosed with an incurable disease, and he turns to the wall and he cries out to God and he pleads for mercy for another 15 years to live. And he was granted. Exact 15 years. 15 years later, he passes. So it's interesting. So you see glimpses of hope in some of the kings in the house of David. No hope whatsoever in the so many houses that try to rise and to stay in power in the northern kingdom. However, like the north, the kingdom of the south will come to an end for the very same reason. Bad rulers, bad kings, combined with gross idolatry. If Hezekiah was one of the best, Manasseh, his son Manasseh, who succeeded him, was one, if not the worst. Manasseh, well, let's read 2 Kings chapter 21. 2 Kings chapter 21, verse 6, page 328 in the church Bibles. What does this passage say?
And he burned his son as an offering, and used fortune telling and omens, and dealt with mediums and the new necromancers. He did much evil in the sight of the Lord, provoking him to anger.
Yes. No other king did as much. No other king behaved as badly as Manasseh. Even though he repented, and you will find that reference in the book of Chronicles, not in the book of Kings, his evil was such that it virtually assured that judgment was coming on the land, and this despite the righteous reign of Manasseh's grandson, a man named Josiah. Let's read 2 Kings 22, verse 2.
And he did what was right in the eyes of the Lord, and walked in all the way of David his father, and he did not turn aside to the right or to the left.
Yes, you see, reference to David again. This is an assessment of Josiah. But it was, unfortunately, given all the evil that Manasseh and other kings had done up to that point, unfortunately, it was too little, too late. And Kings, 2 Kings 24, verse 3.
Surely this came upon Judah at the command of the Lord to remove them out of his sight for the sins of Manasseh, according to all that he had done.
Yes. So this is a reference to the Babylonians. Nebuchadnezzar, stories of Daniel, I think we're more familiar with that. So Nebuchadnezzar, leading the Neo-Babylonian Empire, is coming, is taking over. He, at that point, Nebuchadnezzar only wants to have influence, political influence, over the area. So you can still have your own king, but you know who's pulling the cords here. And here we have the reason why this is happening. And that was because of Manasseh's sin and lifestyle as a king. So to cut it short, the Babylonians took control of the area in 597 by replacing the king and exiling many leading citizens. That's when Ezekiel the prophet was into exile. Later, in 587, about 10 years later, there was a rebellion against the Babylonians, and they invaded Jerusalem, and they destroyed the city, destroyed the temple, and they pillaged and looted the city, and they incorporated Judah as a province of the empire. And that's the end of the southern kingdom. And the final statement here for us to consider is this. The dark history of kingship in Israel demonstrates that this human institution, monarchy, is not the final answer to the problems of God's people and humankind in general. Be careful about messianic leaders, whether they are here in America, Brazil, or anywhere in the world. We have seen that Jesus Christ is the ultimate fulfillment of the promise of an anointed king, the true Messiah. However, before things get better, they get far worse. And according to Prophet Jeremiah, for 70 years, they will endure. The southern kingdom, or the Jews, will endure exile until, by the word of God and the rule of God and the providence of God, they will be drawn back to their land to rebuild Jerusalem, rebuild the temple, rebuild the houses, and settle in that land once again. Yes, I did. 20 minutes. I'm happy with that. Yes. Now, as usual, questions?